You're listening to highlights from One Planet Podcast's interview with Paola Spinozzi, coordinator of the PhD program in environmental sustainability and well-being at the University of Ferrara. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
So to be able to develop an ecological mind starts from being ecological mindful and ecological minded. So it's about really understanding what it means to be interdependent, what it means to be interconnected. So that brings together all the species, every kind of species we can think of. It has to really filter very slowly in order to be metabolized, because it takes time. We all think that we understand nature when we are in a natural environment. We all feel energized. We all feel excited. And we all feel uplifted, right? But then how long does it last? And what does it do? What do we do with it? To me, ecological mindedness, the topic of ESIC, is exactly this. Being committed, developing a commitment towards the environment and towards well-being. And with well-being, I mean the well-being of all species. It cannot be the well-being of some species and not of others. Because it's not just altruistic, it's also, in a sense, instrumental, right? It's only when we are really interdependent that we can thrive and we can continue. So this was the core of this conference. From various perspectives, we had mainly, of course, humanities scholars in a very broad sense, but also people from other sectors. And I think that it has attempted to foster an interdisciplinary dialogue. I am a literary scholar by training. So I started off as a scholar of literature and of English literature in particular. And then I realized that I didn't really like boundaries. So since the very beginning, I've always tried to explore other domains of knowledge, other areas. I started with the visual arts. So my first research has focused on the relationship between literature and the visual art. And in fact, my first publications are about that. I wrote a book about the Pre-Raphaelite Brotherhood and British symbolists. So in between writing and painting, in between poetry, novels, and illustration. And that has gone on for quite a number of years. Then I moved on to relationship between literature and science, because what has always fascinated me about science is the writing of science, how science is written, how science is circulated, how science is understood, how science is popularized, and more importantly, how science is narrativized. So what I did was with scholars and scientists, in order to focus on that, in order to focus on various degrees of specialization or non-specialization in the writing of the sciences. That is another very important, I would say, component of my research. And one has got to do with utopian studies. So that will lead me straight to sustainability. Utopian studies as in the ability to envision possible future societies in which, for example, the sciences and the humanities coexist and thrive on each other and sustain each other. And also the anxiety about futures in which instead totalitarianisms prevail. So utopian studies is actually what triggered my interest in sustainability. If you come and think of it, Mia, if you think about ideal societies or nightmarish societies, so the best possible futures, or they were possible futures, then after a while, you come to think about whether the future, whether futures may be sustainable or not, right? Whether we are able to support what we want, whether we are able to not only pursue and achieve, but more importantly, support what we want. So if I look back, I think that there is a common thread that originates from my desire to look into other perspectives, into other forms of research, and ultimately to try and envision futures, envision ways of living in the future that may be acceptable and above, enjoyable by possibly everyone. I know it sounds a bit too much because everyone is a very complicated word, but a world that can be as open and as diverse as possible. This is also what has stimulated me enormously. I had a range of friends and colleagues in different fields, life sciences, biosciences, medicine, chemistry, or more, I would say, soft sciences, political economists, social sciences, and some very deeply rooted ideas are about objectivity, about reliability, about also credibility. of what is discovered. And there's also this bias whereby the humanities are all about the representation of the world, while the sciences are all about knowing the world, right? So the task of the sciences to try and understand and know the world, while the humanities are entitled to and supposed to represent the world. But I've always believed that that is not the case, in the sense that the roles are in fact very deeply intertwined, that literature and the humanities and philosophy, history, the arts are ways of knowing the world and of course of representing the world, just like the sciences do. So the sciences cannot do without verbalizing. They cannot do without representing. You see, they do exactly the same. They understand the world in certain ways, and then they try to make sense of the world, and they try to communicate what they understand of the world, what they find about the world, in ways that are more or less understandable. So I think that what is really important is to try and put things together to bring people to talk to each other. Well, I would say that it could be reduced to two main broad concepts. On the one hand, the idea that narrativizing the sciences and narrativizing what the sciences can tell us about the future can be exciting, uplifting, fascinating, or terrifying. You see, if you want to adopt this bipolar mode, then there are, of course, many other modes that are more intermediate. But there are these two poles, one of which is one of excitement about the possibilities, about the potential that scientific discoveries allow humans to achieve. And on the other hand, the anxiety about what can happen if anything goes wrong, also fearing that everything could possibly go wrong. So literary people, writers, artists, musicians, film directors have been able to foresee into the future. This is what they do from a creative point of view. And this has allowed the very wide and diverse audiences to try and identify with these different interpretations, with novels or poems that talk about anxiety, for example, about eco-anxiety, or that instead foresee a better future. Well, I would say that it could be reduced to two main broad concepts. On the one hand, the idea that narrativizing the sciences and narrativizing what the sciences can tell us about the future can be exciting, uplifting, fascinating, or terrifying. You see, if you want to adopt this bipolar mode, then there are, of course, many other modes that are more intermediate. But there are these two poles, one of which is one of excitement about the possibilities, about the potential that scientific discoveries allow humans to achieve. And on the other hand, the anxiety about what can happen if anything goes wrong, also fearing that everything could possibly go wrong. So literary people, writers, artists, musicians, film directors have been able to foresee into the future. This is what they do from a creative point of view. And this has allowed the very wide and diverse audiences to try and identify with these different interpretations, with novels or poems that talk about anxiety, for example, about eco-anxiety, or that instead foresee a better future. Very, very important. If I may quote a foreign last one, that would be Doris Lessing. Doris Lessing, that is a very important utopian thinker in her own right. She wrote Mare and Dan, a truly utopian or dystopian climate fiction, in fact. So we could actually define, classify that text as very good examples of climate fiction. But I would like to think about Doris Lessing more in terms of an author that always been very sensitive to diversity. And I'm thinking about African Stories, in which she goes back to her childhood memory and memories in the plural to talk about Zimbabwe, where she was raised, and the clash between her readings as an English girl that would read about the Lady of Shalott or British romance and King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, an environment that was completely different, couldn't have been more different. So she looked out of the window and she saw the savannah. And she read and she saw the lakes and the moats in medieval England. So I think Doris Lessing also is an amazing inspirational author. When we talked about cities, if I have to think about Italy, it's not only about cities, it's about regions. Italy is a country made up of regions. So you think in regional terms, also you think about Italy in Europe. And you have to think about the terrible dividing that we had between North and South. So someone who lives in a very rich and privileged region, Emilia-Romagna, so the rural center, but things change gradually and then dramatically if you go south. So when we talk about how to adapt to the future, well, how we adapt to the future is very different. And we think about Sicily, Puglia, where we have the most breathtaking landscapes and seascapes in Italy, but very difficult issues when it comes to infrastructures, when it comes to policies, when it comes to government, and when it comes to the relationship between those regions and the central government. So that is another very important challenge, to be able to diversify, which is clearly very difficult because humans tend to homogenize, right? They tend to reduce everything, to simplify everything. Instead, we have to think about as many different options as possible and keep them together. I would want people of the future to be able to preserve cultural memories, memories of how cultures, their own cultures and all the cultures that they will encounter in their lives have come to be, how they have developed, how they have interacted with other culture, how they have clashed with other culture. So I think of culture in very broad terms, but above all, I think of memory. I think that memory is fundamental for each and every one of us, regardless of our main area of interest or expression. I think that memory is what allows us to not fall into gaps, not fall into the abyss of oblivion, misunderstanding. And it takes a lot of energy to preserve cultural memories.
We hope you've enjoyed this program and listening to the highlights of this podcast. If you'd like to get involved in One Planet Podcast or learn more about environmental projects, click on the subscribe button. Thank you for listening.